So yesterday on the programme we had the fantastic Mr. Stephen Fry, who was on talking about, first of all, being the King of New York, because his production, well, his appearance as Malvolio in The Twelfth Night, that whole production is just getting fantastic reviews. The other thing he was talking about was being Master of Lake Town in Hobbit Part 2, which is The Desolation of Smaug. And in the course of our conversation, we were referring casually to goblins, elves, orcs and Middle-earth, as though everybody knew precisely what we were talking about. It may well be that wasn't the case. However, all can be explained with Dr. Dimitra Femi, who's lecturer in English at Cardiff Metropolitan University. Hello, Dimitra.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the programme. So, goblins, elves and orcs, were they the creation from this book and from this whole trilogy, or did it come from somewhere else?
Well, a lot of those characters you just mentioned come from Northern European mythology, which is one of the main kind of pools of material that Tolkien and many other fantasists have borrowed from and have reworked.
So what was new about what he did, Dimitri? If he's borrowed those characters from other mythology, what did he do that was different?
Well, first of all, fantasy is very much a 20th century phenomenon. Mythologies come from, you know, ancient times or the Middle Ages, and they're often connected to people's religious beliefs. This is a very different kind of thing. This is taking certain ideas, certain motifs and certain characters and making them very relevant to today, to the time that each author is writing, and actually, in a way, reconfiguring reality, expressing reality in a different way via those mythical characters.
Are there traditional English mythical characters, or did these all come from somewhere else?
Well, Tolkien himself was very frustrated about the fact that there was very little material of English mythology left. He knew that there was a lot of Celtic material left, a lot of Welsh and Irish, a lot of Romance material in the Romance languages in Europe and Scandinavian countries, not enough English. So his original impetus for writing anything at all was to create a mythology for England. He longed for a mythological kind of pedigree for England, which wasn't there.
Now, The Hobbit was published in 1937. Next year, Lord of the Rings celebrates its 60th anniversary. Its enduring appeal, as far as you're concerned, as lecturer in English, is down to what?
Oh, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it? I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this work is reusing legends and fairy tale material and myth material that people know from, you know, generation to generation. At the same time, though, Tolkien himself believed very much that fantasy had the capacity to actually give us the consolation of a happy ending. He believed very much into this idea of the fairy tale ending for works. You know, usually in fantasy you have something wrong, some kind of dark lord who comes, force of evil, threatening the world, and then somehow people kind of muster together and sort it out, and there's a big battle at the end. You know, you lose some characters on the way, but at the end everything is sorted. And for Tolkien that was quite important, you know, the fairy tale ending. This is not exactly what modern or postmodern literature is doing. You know, this is something that in a lot of mainstream literature is seen as a bit soft, you know, ending things with a good and happy way. Well, for Tolkien that was a need. And I suppose, you know, we still do need, you know, psychologically, we still do like this idea of a good conclusion.
It's a fascinating world, Dimitra. We appreciate your time with us. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Dimitra Femi, author and lecturer in English at Cardiff Metropolitan University. Melvin Bragg, your heart.